This is where the DJ talks. Don't say anything.
Okay.
Each of these media creates a new environment. It creates a new situation for human association and human perception. Any medium at all creates a new pattern, a new atmosphere, a new environment of human perception, which works upon the whole man. It works upon the whole society. That is the effect of a medium. It has that total pervasive effect. That is the message, that social change that is brought about. The content of the medium is never the message, because the content is always the old medium.
From the vast wilds of the Great White North for the week of October the 20th, 2014, it's TVA, a Canadian perspective on television. From north and south of the 49th parallel, I'm Anthony Marco.
And I'm Diane Wild.
And I'm Greg David.
And we would like to ask you to put your television on mute for episode number 168 of TVA, the podcast. Another 2 weeks has come and gone. What did you call us earlier, Diane, on the Twitters?
Oh, the something three. What did I call us?
Evil three?
No, it wasn't evil. It was good.
The drunken three?
The drunken three amigos?
The gang of three.
The gang of three. There you go. I was trying to look it up, but you beat me to it. Yes, the gang of three. I don't know why. It just sounded good to me.
The gang of three. The ungodly trio.
It makes it sound tough. I like sounding tough.
The gang of three.
So not tough.
We just flash gang signs at each other. Instantly, we wouldn't get a grant to make a television show because we were flashing gang signs at each other.
The gang signs would be all network logos.
That's just really scary. That makes us evil again. Thanks. We had some big news that kind of happened today, and we're going to be talking about that off the top. We do have some news that's happened over the last couple of weeks as well. I do want to remind you right off the top, and hopefully I'll remind you at the end as well. If you want to submit any links to us, every 2 weeks we come on and do this, the news version of the TVA podcast. You can fire them to tveh.reddit.com. That's our subreddit. While you're there, if you subscribe to the subreddit, you can vote things up, vote things down. Let us know what you want us to talk about. And I know it's not wholly bought into yet because, well, maybe a lot of the people who listen to this podcast aren't quite invested in subreddit, but or in Reddit. That's fine. That's fine. We hope you'll get there eventually.
I think there's also like 5 stories in Canadian TV, and they figure we got it covered.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've got I think we had like about – we have more of this over the last 2 weeks than we have in previous weeks. We had about a dozen or so to choose from, so – an average of one a day, let's say.
Some of them are boring, let's put it that way.
Jeez, nice sell.
Wow.
Yeah.
But we're not doing those ones.
Exactly. Also, if you're interested in helping out the podcast in a financial way, kind of a value for value model, please feel free to go to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/TV_EH. That's where you can say, hey, you know, this podcast to me is worth $1 an episode. And just say, hey, there you go. I want to contribute. I want to help out. I want to help them make it better for me. I don't know how that'll happen yet. It'll involve us mentioning your name on the podcast.
Yes, it will involve Anthony, I don't know, dancing and singing for us.
Audio only. I can sing. I ain't going to dance.
Well, I think how about we do have it be time to name them again, because I think it's been a while and I've probably butchered their names twice already. So there's Bram Abramson is one of our patrons, Doug Slater, and Christopher A. Butler. So thank you to them for helping to fund. It basically funds the site. I mean, obviously it funds the podcast, but.
Well, yeah. I mean, the podcast is probably the single biggest server draw.
Yeah.
Right? Sure. On the site. So when people go and download the podcast, it's like, hey, it doesn't take anything to download a web page or pull a web page. But when you're downloading 30 megabytes or so of a podcast, it's fairly substantial. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, you can help out with any of those. But before we get to our first story of the episode, which is a big one, folks, after all the stuff we've talked about over the past couple of weeks, it is time for our beverage update. And Diane, you've got quite a bit to live up to after the TV ABC's episode that we just had on last week.
I'm actually a little bit jealous and bitter. I'm bitter and jealous.
Eric Johnson had a named cocktail that he was drinking during the episode.
The Dark and Stormy, and I can't remember what was in it other than rum.
That's all you have to remember, isn't it? It was actually like a
beer.
Yeah, some kind of, but it was like a self-made ginger beer mix. Like it wasn't just poured out of a can.
He probably made it with the same machine that Diane has at her house.
SodaStream. It was carbonated.
Yeah, SodaStream. Yeah.
I don't know. That kind of turns it into a girly drink, I think. It didn't sound like a girly drink. It sounded like a very, very powerful
drink. A manly drink.
A manly drink, yes. I was jealous of it, though. And I do like rum, though. I never really drink it.
No, I'm not a rum drinker. The only time I used to drink rum is when I was too young to drink, and the cheapest bottle of booze you could get at the Ontario liquor store was called Old Navy rum. And you get your oldest looking friend to sneak in and buy you a Mickey of Old Navy rum for $8.
You were a rebel.
Rebel without a clue. Brain cells lost.
So yeah, I cannot compete with Eric Johnson, unfortunately. I should have prepared. I had like a week to prepare and I didn't prepare.
Yeah, cumulatively, I believe you can.
Well, cumulatively, maybe. I'm just about finished my strawberry rooibos, which is one of my favorites. So it's kind of a staple.
You've been disappointing me ever since you haven't had combination flavors of rooibos. I'm just saying.
I know. And it's, you know, I could have, but the only two that I think I have at home right now are the strawberry and the O Canada, which is maple. And I just didn't think they would go together very well. So yeah, I could not please you. I'm sorry.
The name would sound fine, but upon thinking about the taste of it, things would take a turn.
Yeah,
but strawberry maple sounds okay when you say it.
I guess it sounds okay. I don't think my taste buds sort of rebelled. Yeah. And then I have my sangria, which I've been drinking for a while. I keep saying
that's your pre-bottled sangria.
Yes, and I keep saying it works. I'm so addicted to that sangria we had at our getaway, and I'm like, I should not use that word with alcohol because people at work are going to start wondering about me, and I really don't drink that much. But my sparkly water is slightly more interesting. It's a pear kiwi sparkling water, and it's slightly sweet.
So it's two kiwis, is what you're saying?
Kiwi pear sparkling water, and it actually, this one is lightly sweetened, which most of my sparkling waters aren't, so it's you know, more in the pop family than the water family, really. That's all I got.
So just the three?
Just the three. Okay. I usually only have three.
Greg, how about you? Can you compete with that?
I can't. I never can, so I don't even try. Now, before I talk about mine, is sangria, is that red wine or is that white wine?
Well, this one happens to be red wine, and I thought that was the most normal, but they do have white sangria.
They do have white, okay.
Yeah.
Most of
okay.
them I've ever seen are red wine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so I was going to have the dark and stormy, but the only thing that I have here for rum is my Sammy Hagar Beach Rum.
Sammy Hagar Beach Rum?
Sammy Hagar has rum, and I went down, he was in town to launch it, so I bought a bottle, and it's a white rum, it's not a dark rum. So I didn't want to try and make it and not have it be with the proper ingredients.
So it's not called Cabo Wabo Rum?
No, it's not. It's called Beach Bar Rum. I'm looking at it right now. It's called, it's Sammy's, and it's numbered, Anthony. The bottle is numbered.
Which number is it?
I can't see from here. I think it's like 400 and something.
Ooh, that's one of the good hundreds.
Yeah. So instead what I'm having is a chili Amsterdam blonde, no preservatives, 5% alcohol, made with artisanal water, I'm assuming.
Sure. Let's run with that.
It does have a smooth, mellow finish. So that's what I'm having. What about you, Anthony?
Okay, so here we go. So I was down in the States.
Oh yeah, you have a new bottle, don't you?
I do have a new bottle, but that's not what I'm drinking right now. Here's what I did though. Diane may be sick.
Tell me that you're not drinking Diet Coke.
I'm not drinking Diet Coke. Diane may be sickened by this though. So I went down to a supermarket in the States, and I buy the like the equivalent. So the Crystal Light, which is like the lemonade with, you know, sugar free kind of stuff. But they have a brand down there called Totally Light, and I got the bonus variety pack, which includes four different flavors. So I can actually sound like I'm meeting the requirements of the beverage update. I am drinking the Totally Light Tea to Go Red Tea Peach Sugar Free Powdered Drink.
Wow.
That sounds fancy.
It does.
I know. See?
Disgusting.
Really?
I
bought this just for this podcast. I'm not even going to tell you the other three flavors yet.
Wow.
Yes.
We have weeks to look forward to that.
Exactly.
Alicia, new one every other week.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
This will carry me for two straight months. I will be able to come up with some kind of flavor that sounds far more enticing than Diet Coke. Although while I was down there, I did buy a couple of bottles of Diet Coke as well, which are unique in the fact that they have not bought into the Canadian branding idea of sticking someone's name on it.
Really? I thought that was worldwide.
Well, not on their bottles, maybe. Maybe just on the cans.
I mean, I have no idea. I just assumed that.
So anyway, or maybe I just have an old bottle.
Yeah, the old bottle's at Wegmans. Dusty.
No, it wasn't Wegmans, unfortunately. It was Taps Friendly Markets. Taps, yes. So that's the beverage update for this week, folks. Time to get into the news. Big news today. Rogers Media announces a partnership with, wait for it, Netflix.
But aren't they the devil, Anthony?
That's what I've heard ever since the CRTC hearings. Everything I'm hearing is that, ooh, Netflix, they're killing television. But apparently Rogers isn't killing. So Rogers, as far as I'm concerned, is now an accessory to murder.
Exactly. Yes.
Exactly.
Their hands are dirty.
So someone explain the details of all this to me.
Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead.
We'll fight over it. No, you go. No, okay. So basically they're collaborating on a show called Between, and one of the it's created by Michael McGowan, who I don't know at all. But somehow isn't John Cassar involved somehow?
He's a producer. Yeah.
I'm looking at the media release, which I don't know, sort of buries that, which I would put up front if I were them. Mm. But anyway, so it's called Between. It's 6 1-hour episodes. It's going to premiere in Canada. It will be on City and Show Me, which is their new streaming service, which is supposed to be the Netflix killer. And outside of Canada, it's going to air on Netflix. And they ponied up some money for financing. And so that's how it came to be. And Rogers has said that it was the producers who brought Netflix on board as a partner, a financial partner, which is the way it often works with a co-production, that they go to the network with the financing in place so that it's more appealing to the broadcaster. So it's interesting. And Netflix Canada will show it, I think, a year after it airs on City. But first, it's basically a second window, as they call it in Canada, that Netflix has it. So City will air it originally.
I guess the question for me is this. If Show Me is supposed to be the Netflix killer, you've just lessened the incentive for me to get Show Me, because now you've told me Netflix Canada is going to get the show.
It's all very hypocritical. Let's put it that way. My favorite piece of information reading about this is that, so the CRTC has hearings all the time. I mean, this one that just happened is not alone. They happen all the time. So 2009, at the CRTC hearing that they do every couple of years, all of the broadcasters said, please do not regulate online streaming. It's complimentary service. It's not broadcasting. It's complimentary to broadcasting. It's not competition. Please don't regulate our online space. CRTC didn't regulate it. 2011, all the broadcasters changed their tune, whereas in 2009, they were saying, oh my God, please don't regulate. Please don't regulate. They said any smart broadcaster would be able to, you know, use the internet, basically. 2011, oh my God, you have to regulate, please regulate. Well, guess what year Netflix came into Canada?
Exactly.
2010. So they're just a bunch of hypocrites is the polite way to put it. And I honestly, I'm just
Can you
so...
tell me the unpolite way to put it, Diane? I'll pay you $10 to tell me the unpolite way to put it.
No. But then there's a bunch of buzz online right now that, you know, all these groups are saying you shouldn't be happy about this deal that Netflix is having, this original Canadian series that, you know, they're partnering with a Canadian broadcaster. You shouldn't be happy about it because it means that Netflix is taking advantage of the Canadian TV system without paying into it. Well, I wonder where these same people were when CBS, for example, bought into Flashpoint, or Canal Plus buys into a Canadian co-production, or we have co-production treaties with a gazillion countries. We have co-ventures with the United States. They involve a foreign broadcaster helping to finance what we consider a Canadian series. And nobody has ever gone through the roof about it the way they are with Netflix. And I've been saying, not online, but I will say, this is like the Canadian TV's version of Ebola. It's like they're just trying to get people freaked out about it to pursue their own agenda, which is that they want Netflix to be regulated and pay into the system so that it won't compete with their little Show Me service and whatever Bell is coming up with.
So, Greg, when I read the premise for this show, to me it reads like The Hunger Games meets Logan's Run.
Yeah, I mean, survivalist thriller series. What is it? The story of a town under siege from a mysterious disease that has wiped out everybody except those 21 years old and under. And it, I mean, it's, you know, I sight unseen, it reminds me of, you know, any survivalist shows of a post-apocalyptic series that's on the air. I mean, the 100 is on CW right now. It sounds very similar to that. And, you know, I was going to say something about John Cassar, who's, you know, obviously everybody knows him from 24. And I actually had read the press release and I thought, wow, they're saying that he's Canadian. He is, in fact, Canadian. So anyway, that means nothing, neither here nor there, except that he's Canadian. So I just learned.
Is so.
Is so. But you know,
so, Greg, can you? This is like, I didn't want to admit how dumb I am online, but Roger Wong, who's, you know, he's been a nice friend of the site for a while. He made a joke, I think, about Jeremiah under the dome. I don't get the joke.
Well, you know, basically the same kind of storylines as a show like Jeremiah and also Under the Dome. Yeah, there was a show called
Jeremiah.
Yeah.
That's the piece I was missing.
Yeah, yeah. He didn't put the comma in between. So, yeah, those were
But I didn't even know
shows.
There was a show called Jeremiah. I just
thought. Yeah, from a few years ago. Wow. Okay. I'm moving the beer away.
Post-apocalypticist.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, it's a pretty hot genre right now. So
sure.
That's what this is. But, I just find this so funny because, as we were saying before we actually started the podcast, I mean, you know, Netflix had this, you know, back and forth at the Let's Talk TV sessions. And then they turn around and they've gotten into bed with Rogers and Show Me for this. You know, and you knew that they had this deal in their back pocket, so it didn't really matter what was happening at these hearings or anything that was said between themselves and the head of the commission, that this was going to be happening anyway. And like Diane said, this is no different from any co-pro. I mean, if we didn't have co-pros, goodbye Murdoch Mysteries.
Yeah. How much you want to make a bet that this was the result of the CRTC saying, you know what, we're not going to get into legislating this now or regulating this now, and so there was in the back room somewhere they said, hey, you know what, Netflix, why don't you kick us a couple $100,000 toward her, a couple $1 million towards this series, and we just won't raise a stink about anything.
Yeah.
Well, except that, I mean, this deal would have been taking place before the CRTC hearing, and they did, I wouldn't specifically know if Rogers was making a stink about Netflix, but the other broadcasters certainly did. I kind of doubt. I think the timing is that they've been doing this kind of deal for a while. They don't care what country they're programming comes from. And this explains something that puzzled me, which was that Happy Valley, which is a really good UK series, mm-hmm. It's labeled a Netflix original. And I couldn't figure out why, because it's a BBC show and it aired in the UK on BBC, but it's the same model as this, which I didn't know I didn't know Netflix was getting into co-productions, I guess.
Right.
I'm also slightly puzzled that a lot of the media around it is calling it their first Canadian original. So they're not counting Trailer Park Boys, which they brought back to life. So I don't know if they don't consider Arrested Development, for example, a Netflix original in the ones that were only on Netflix. I don't quite understand the terminology.
Oh, they must be talking about the first Canadian one.
But Trailer Park Boys is what I'm saying.
Like, yeah, yeah.
So Trailer Park Boys, to me, was the first Canadian original, but I guess they're not counting it that way because it was a series before. I don't know.
Right, yeah, yeah. And that's the same thing with Lilyhammer. I mean, it's dubbed, it's billed as a Netflix original, but it's original to Norway first, and then it's just distributed on Netflix around the rest of the world. So this isn't new by any means. Certainly new here in Canada, but not new anywhere else around the world.
Yeah.
And I really don't understand the fuss about it being... Like, to me, it's like any other co-production. Either you are upset about any co-production because, for example, CBS doesn't pay into the Canadian Media Fund, neither does... I can't think of any of the international ones, but let's say Canal Plus, because I know them, and, you know, whatever the UK broadcaster might be, ITV, for example. I don't know if we have any co-productions with them. But, you know, whatever, those broadcasters don't pay into the Media Fund either. So no. I don't know what the fuss is about. And I'm getting a little tired of the sky is falling rhetoric that keeps coming up around Netflix.
Yeah. Well, especially, don't get me wrong, I can understand that people want Netflix to have to pay a certain amount here, pay a certain amount here. I can understand them wanting to. But to take the position that there's some legal reason why they should, I don't think that's been anywhere established yet. I mean, I can understand the lobby. Everyone lobbies for everything. I get that aspect of it.
Well, in fact, I mean, this deal is perfectly. Like, this deal is made possible by CRTC regulation. I mean, they've set it up so that this kind of deal happens. The CRTC has decided not to regulate Netflix. I mean, it's all completely above board. You can petition the CRTC to want to regulate online spaces, but then, you know, that applies to ShowMe. It's going to apply to Bell's thing. It's going to apply to everything. I also feel a little bit like it's just more proof that the CRTC is completely full of crap, because the 2014 hearing was supposed to be, I mean, the way they marketed it was, there's no holds barred. We are reimagining the Canadian television landscape. Things are changing. Yeah. Nothing's changed. And I mean, you know, my point is that they discovered the internet in 2010. Like, that's when the broadcasters were like, oh, we must regulate this Wild West open space. So I have a hard time having any sympathy for a regulatory model, a broadcasting system, and an industry that didn't understand the impact of the internet until 2011 and still doesn't seem to get how maybe a broadcasting system could work, because I just feel like there's a lot of talk and not a lot of solutions that make a lot of sense.
I have a question. What's the difference between an original drama series and a premium original drama series?
Most of the other stuff is crap.
So this is premium crap? I think it means you're paying more. You're paying for it. Right? Premium cable.
All of this talk, by the way, and it's 6 episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a 6-episode show. Now, you know what? Was it City that about 3 years ago did 6 episodes? Was it The Yard that they did?
That was HBO or the Movie Network?
Was that HBO or it could have been? But yeah. I enjoyed that show. I mean, all six.
It was like the schoolyard version of The Wire.
Yeah, like all 6 episodes of it. It was really good. This kind of reminds me of not only like a Logan's Run, Hunger Games, but like almost a like Lord of the Flies kind of vibe to it. it's going to be, you know, because the oldest person's going to be 21, and then I guess the question is, do they? The big question during season one will be, do they die when they turn, like, everyone has died, but do they die when they turn
20? The 20-year-olds are all quaking in their boots.
Exactly. But go to see Logan's Run, where they kill everybody who's 30 or above, and then you'll get the idea. So with all of that, friend of the show, Jim Henshaw, I think he's been on the show before. Did we have him on?
He has in the earlier incarnation. Yeah.
Back in the day. Put a post up earlier today, actually, which asked the question, why isn't the CRTC regulating movie theaters? And it may sound absurd right off the bat, but he makes an interesting case where he actually says, look, with most modern movie theaters now, in order to avoid piracy, they don't actually send prints out to movie theaters anymore. It's all done via digital download. And these movie theaters put in these incredibly high-end internet connections so they can download these, you know, multi-tens of gigabytes files so they can show these films, because they have to be incredibly high resolution, high quality. With that being said, how is a streaming download to a movie theater any different than a streaming download to your television set? You're paying for both. You're choosing to pay for both. So if the argument is going to be that we should be regulating Netflix, why shouldn't the CRTC also be regulating a movie theater?
It is a very interesting point that I think only Jim would have thought of.
I think so.
Yeah, I had no idea that they weren't, you know, bringing in these cans of films anymore, to be honest with you.
It had never occurred to me, because, yeah, that's my vision of it. And I haven't updated it, apparently, for like 30 years or something. But there's an interesting comment to his post, too, which says that the reason they weren't taxed was it's historical. And, you know, so the reason Netflix is going to be taxed is historical, too. I don't know. I just feel like there's no real logic behind our broadcasting system. It's about preserving it's about preserving giant corporations' business interests. And it's not like that's a surprise, but then don't try and market it to the public as in, we care about your opinion and we're going to revamp the broadcasting system.
Well, it's like in the US how the National Football League doesn't pay any taxes.
Yeah, I only learned that recently when they had the big, you know, kind of scandals about players beating up their wives and that kind of thing. And, you know, that was one way that they were seen as being like, that's a way you could attack them where it hurts, is to, you know, try and get the government to stop having them as a nonprofit.
An interesting perspective, though, with everyone, I can't say everybody, with one side running around saying that we have to regulate Netflix, they have to do this and this and this. To me, you know, going to see something in a movie theater or seeing something in my basement is becoming virtually the same exchange at this point. Don't get me wrong, there are some things in a movie theater that are worth going to see. But I would say, compared to when I was younger, I go to see far less movies in a movie theater these days. Unless I feel like I can have a very unique experience in a movie theater. It's not that I don't like movies anymore. I just don't feel the need to be around people.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of like that too. And the more expensive it gets. But for me, it's more the social aspect. I will go to a movie in a theater if people I know are going to a movie in a theater. I'm not generally the one to suggest it because there's more people there than I really like. But
like, for instance, I went to go see Guardians of the Galaxy this summer because that's a movie that I felt should be seen in a theater. Like, there are some big scope films that should be seen in a theater. If it's a drama,
yep.
I probably don't need to see a drama or most comedies in a theater. So, interesting concept, though. The other news which came out about a week ago or so was the idea that HBO in the U.S., not necessarily in Canada, but it could be a sign of things to come, is going to next year essentially release their own app or web subscription service that lets you watch all of HBO without having to do anything else. In other words, you don't have to be subscribed to a satellite system. You don't have to be subscribed to cable. You don't have to, you know, punch in your address to prove that you're subscribed to cable. You just go onto the HBO website, say, I want access to all of your programming, and they'll say it's going to cost you this much per month, and you're ready to go. And for a lot of people, down in the States anyway, to get started, that's going to be a value proposition that makes sense to them. Because there's so many people, because that's the thing HBO does, which is great now, is they may only do 13-episode seasons, but as soon as one 13-episode season is done, they start something else up. You know, they've got shows coming all year round, and there's always going to be new content on there.
Yeah, and the day after HBO made this announcement in the States, CBS announced that they were going to be doing, they were going to be offering up a subscription where I think it was $6.99 down in the States, where you would have access to all of CBS's shows on their website, their back library of stuff. So, you know, this is, you know, hello, this is the new, this is the new model, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens as we go forward, because are they going to be? Is if it was me and I could just pay, you know, we were talking about the a la carte, you know, not too long ago. If I could just pay to have access to all of HBO's stuff, why wouldn't I do that? If I could stream it through an app or something like that on my phone or on my computer, I'd look into that.
Well, I wonder if Bell's announcement that they bought up a bunch of HBO rights, like streaming rights for Canada in advance of what has been hinted is going to be their version of Netflix, Show Me, whatever. Like, it almost seems like they foreshadowed, that's not the right word, but they foreshadowed what's happening now. Like, they were going to do that. They were going to stream HBO content, and, you know, so now HBO is saying, yeah, we're going to do that in the
but
States.
But they better be savvy about their price point on it, because it takes nothing to use a proxy server to stream U.S. content into Canada. There are services like Unblock Us, which you can set up within your internet router itself to make it look like you're downloading from Canada. And if you're using most browsers, you can use a plugin to say, hey, I'm downloading from the U.S. or I'm downloading from Great Britain. I'm downloading from a whole bunch of different places. So if they think they're going to come up with their version of this and start charging people $15 a month, where HBO might be charging $5 a month. And that would be, you want to talk about a great price point for HBO? $5 a month, $60 a year.
Yep.
That's the price point. If they could put it
at, too cheap to me. I can't see them doing that.
Yeah, but that's
this is what, $15 a month to get the channel?
Well, no, it's streaming content, right?
No, I know, yeah. But I'm saying, like,
but I mean, to me, that's $60 a year.
Yeah, that's a sweet spot because they...
It's cheaper than Netflix.
But they also have less shows than Netflix, right? Yeah. I mean, Netflix as a whole.
But they can do more current, too. Like,
yep.
People would pay a premium for.
If they're doing their entire back catalog, which they're probably going to do, which goes... Mm-hmm. HBO in the States goes a hell of a long way back. Mm-hmm. I mean, it goes back to the late 70s. Mid or late 70s, I think. So, I mean, they've got, like... They had sports on there. Remember, HBO was like... they were the ones that showed like title fights and stuff
that's
like
right.
that. Because they used to all be
paper. I didn't know that. I knew they were like
right.
movies was the big thing, but I didn't know.
Comedy yeah. specials, all the early George Carlin comedy right, specials,
yeah.
right?
Steve Martin, yep. yep.
So I mean, there's a lot of stuff which goes way back on HBO, which is all good stuff. I'm saying that if they charged $5, it would go insane. If they charge $10, it'll still do well. But if they went $5, they would get millions upon millions of people. Because there are some places in the States that you just can't get HBO.
That's right. Yep.
Yep. So. No, I mean, I think it's really savvy of them. And it does show that, you know, again, I think this is sort of the way everyone has known TV was going to move, and it's moving slowly, and maybe we will always have that cable in our living rooms that attaches to a monitor, but you know, it takes Canada like 10 years later than everyone else to catch up on what's happening. So it would be nice to think that we're trying to catch up faster now.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to take Canada that long, because I think what's going to happen is people are going to realize very quickly that there's enough. When a mom, and I hate to generalize like this, when a mom, dad, aunt, uncle, or grandparents can figure out how to get around geolocation, that's something that's, you know, really, I mean, you take a look at something like that and you say, holy crap, this is a scenario whereby somebody can just download a plugin on their browser and all of a sudden they can use this, whereas they would have been befuddled before and they wouldn't have been able to use it. That says a lot. You know, all of a sudden you've opened up, you know, another 25-30% of the internet population who can jump on and use this right.
I would still love to see figures on VPN use and that kind of use, because I suspect that ease of use supersedes that in a lot of households, that some people just want to sit in front of their TV and turn it on and it works. Right. And, you know, I know people who still don't, they wouldn't know what you meant by any of what you just said, for example. And I mean, I do think we're maybe moving more towards that, but it's like downloading. There are a lot of people who just watch shows because they download it from BitTorrent, but that's not the majority of television viewers. And, you know, VPN was the Canadian Media, whatever they're called, Production Association. That's not it at all. But anyway, they were really going after the VPN use. And I just thought, I would want to see the statistics that show that that is right now one of the biggest threats to the Canadian television industry, because I don't see it. I mean, just in my own life, I don't see many people who use it or who know what it is. And I'm all about the data. Show me the numbers.
I see HBO and CBS as more of a threat to Hulu than a threat to Netflix.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So another article which came up this week from friends.ca, there's a top level domain for you, by the way, friends.ca/patronage is from the Friends of Canadian Broadcasting. It's an article which calls itself the Conservative Broadcasting Corporation and brings out a very interesting statistic, which is that 10 of the 12 current members of the CBC Board of Directors, all of whom have been appointed by Prime Minister Stephen Harper, are or have been financial contributors to the Conservative Party of Canada. This includes the CBC president, Hubert Lacroix, who hasn't donated to them for a while, but back in 2006 donated $1,000 to them. But some of the more recent appointees have made donations. They go back for a term of 5 years. But they've certainly done their research into it. There's a couple people who haven't. Pierre Gingras and Maureen McCaw both haven't made donations to the Conservative Party, but everyone else who currently sits on the CBC Board of Directors has made donations recently to the, and some of them, we're talking about like five times out of the last 6 or 7 years, which to me just, it's like a head smack dough moment when you think about the fact that here is people like Hubert Lacroix and people who aren't on the board necessarily, who are complaining about all the lack of funding and how they're being winnowed down and all the layoffs and stuff like that. And the people on the board, what are they doing about it? I mean, have we heard anybody other than occasionally Hubert Lacroix talk about this? I don't know any of these other names, to be honest with you.
No, I was going to say, I'm not sure that I have. I'm not sure, you know.
No, I don't either.
It depends what you think the role of the board is. I mean, theoretically, they're supposed to be governing the CBC, but I don't think it's a huge surprise, to tell the truth. I mean, these are political appointees. What did this look like under a liberal government, you know, after a while? I bet a lot of them were liberal donors too. You know, and I say this as I am not a conservative. I do not agree with, you know, the cutting of the CBC, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not trying to justify this or defend it, but CBC cuts were pretty drastic under liberal governments too. So I have a hard time making the connection. Again, like, this makes me seem like I'm, I don't know, like cold-blooded or something, but I would like to see the comparison. What did the board look like after, you know, however many years of rule of the Liberal Party? I bet it looked fairly similar, except flipped, that a lot of them were Liberal donors. I don't have any information to back that up, but they are political appointees, and why would a prime minister appoint somebody other than knowing that they can kind of have them in their pocket?
So you're right in that the board's job is to govern, but should it also be to advocate, is what I'm curious about?
Well, I mean, theoretically, but I mean, advocate for what? Like, I get so mired in what the hell is the CBC's role supposed to be anytime I talk about the CBC, because, you know, under the last, I hate the word regime because it makes it sound like such a negative thing, but Christine Stewart and, you know, sort of her merry band of people, you know, had a certain vision for what the CBC was under Hubert Lacroix, and it was going sort of towards chasing ratings, chasing more populist fare, partly because of financial realities that they had to make money from advertising. So they had to compete with private networks. It feels to me like CBC is trying to turn a corner a little bit. And this is under a conservative government. It's under this board. It feels a bit like they're moving slightly away from that, or at least testing the waters of that. They put on a show like Strange Empire. They've got Ascension, which is a very different show for them. They've got the Book of Negroes. And I mean, they always do have these mini-series kind of things where there's not a ton of commitment. But I feel like maybe Heather Conway has a slightly different vision. Could be wrong, because she doesn't give a lot of public interviews. But I just, I'm just not sure that I buy the political conspiracy more than there is always a political conspiracy against the CBC. Like, it's such an easy target if you're trying to win popular opinion that, you know, funding shouldn't go to something that, I don't know, everybody has an opinion on the CBC and nobody thinks it's doing a great job. No matter what they think the vision of the CBC is supposed to be, it can't fulfill that because it has to be everything to everyone.
You're right in that it's by itself. It shouldn't necessarily be if this was by itself and the CBC was just clicking along as it did for many years, for good or for bad, this probably wouldn't be a tie two things together. Yeah. But the fact that all the cuts have happened, and that with the cuts, we just haven't seemed to hear anything from anyone on this board other than Hubert Lacroix, who happens to be the president, so he kind of has to say something once in a while. Just haven't heard of any of them.
Yeah, but again, I still think that the board is the government. I mean, CBC is a crown corporation. You know, the board acts on behalf of the government. So I'm not sure I think that's alarming or different.
Right. I guess another thing that I don't know either is looking at some of the names. I don't know what their backgrounds are at all.
No.
Like, you would hope you would hope that they had some kind of background in television. And some of them might.
Like
broadcasting. Broadcast. Yeah. Some of them might not. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, very interesting. Which leads us to a rather long article which came out in the Globe and Mail. This was about a week and a half ago on Friday. Hockey Night in Canada, How CBC Lost It All. And when I say for the Globe and Mail, a pretty long article, it's, you know, three web pages. It's a pretty dense and well-researched article. But the thing that ticked me off about this, and I knew that I shouldn't have been surprised by this, but when CBC, who has kept Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday nights, they're showing Hockey Night in Canada, one of the games, usually the Leaf game, they get absolutely nothing. They have essentially become a broadcast channel for Rogers, who is raking in every single dollar from Hockey Night in Canada. And the CBC is, it's like in old computer days, you used to have what was called a dumb terminal. It was like a terminal that was set up aside on the room, but had no processing power by itself. It kind of fed into a mainframe somewhere. Essentially, the CBC has become a dumb terminal for Rogers. It pumps out this game. It fills 6 hours of programming every single week that it shows across Canada, which is a reach that the Rogers...
6 hours that could have been put to Murdoch Mysteries reruns.
But 6 hours beyond that, CBC has the greatest reach out of any single network in Canada. It reaches everywhere. You would have think that on some level, they could have leveraged that to get something out of this. There are places in Canada that will never have a Rogers channel, will never have a Global Shaw channel, will never, they just won't have them because they're small communities up in the north. You're never going to get cable running there, but they get CBC somehow. And so CBC had that leverage, and what did they do? They gave it away. And if I read somewhere in the article, the argument was, oh, but at least we'll get to essentially pimp our own shows on there during some of the promo spots. Really?
Oh my God.
That was the exchange?
Yeah, you have to wonder how desperate CBC was to actually agree to that, because like you said, you know, they have a bigger reach than everybody else. Now, this one paragraph says that it was, Gary Bettman told them that the only way to stay in the game was to negotiate with the winners. This is really troubling. But then, you know, and you compound the fact that they weren't allowed onto that floor where this huge, massive, set has been built. And it's just, I don't want to use the word parasite because that kind of puts in, you know, a negative context. But the fact that, you know, the Rogers got the rights, CBC's getting nothing out of it, and they've lost a whole floor of their building to, you know, the rival network, which is broadcasting right there in their own building. It's just, it's got to be troubling.
And did you read anywhere that said Rogers is paying even rent on it?
I didn't see anything that said, and like, I bet they probably aren't.
I'm getting the indication that Rogers just took over a floor of the CBC,
yeah,
which is supposed to be a nationally government-held company, and Rogers is coming in and just getting free rent?
Yeah.
Like this, I love hockey the same way many Americans love baseball. I grew up with it. To me, it's mythological in stature in Canada. I don't have to watch every game. I don't have to know every single score. I used to be like that when I was younger. Now I'm not. But I care about hockey as a thing. And to me, this isn't good for hockey as a thing. Don't get me wrong. I understand the economics of sports broadcasting, and I don't understand how that's all it's run on. I mean, you see some of the numbers that come up for the NFL in the States, the billions and billions and billions of dollars, and it's insane. And this deal itself was billions of dollars. I get all of that. I get that that's how it comes to me. But to me, and this is going to sound so hackneyed, but to me, any innocence has been lost.
Well, wasn't it lost when the CBC lost the music to Hockey Night in Canada?
No.
It was lost when Gretzky was sold.
Oh, no.
No, that was impactful on hockey. I'm talking about hockey broadcasting.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
Even though it's on the CBC now, even though it's on the CBC, it's not the CBC. And to me, Hockey Night in Canada has always been CBC. And you can peg me as a traditionalist and just say that I'm not the biggest fan of George Snuffleupagus, but that's a different issue altogether.
But, okay, am I misrepresenting what you're thinking in that I thought you didn't think CBC should spend a ton of money on sports rights?
You're right. I don't. But I do feel like if they were... Here's the thing. If they would have lost it altogether, then that's fair ball.
Yeah,
I don't like this kind of mind meld bastardization that they've done with it.
I totally agree. I
mean, yeah, like to
I
me
just
that's
if you
yeah. I completely agree that I don't think that you should be spending billions of tax dollars on getting rights to broadcast sports. As much as I loved the NHL being on CBC, I think money can be better spent elsewhere than our religious. Celebration of professional sports. But beyond that, if you're going to lose it, then at least do something else with your network, as opposed to just bow down to corporate masters and say, please let us show it for free so that we get to show commercials. And not even commercials, so that we get to show promos.
That is the most pathetic. Like, I mean, I wrote a post about CBC and how their early fall ratings are not good. But you can't blame it on hockey, the loss of hockey, because they still do have the promotional window. Mm-hmm. But also, I mean, their shows premiered before it was really going to kick in anyway. So there's other things going on with CBC and sagging ratings. But, I mean, hockey, yeah, it helps promote their shows, but it helps promote their shows to a specific kind of audience, and they need to break out of that somehow. But it's really pathetic. Like,
show counter programming for the 6 hours. Just go count. Show figure skating the entire 6 hours.
Put some of that to their marketing budget. I mean, whatever they would have spent on hockey. I mean, I know it's not that simple, but it just seems like such a pathetic small reason.
Literally, they could have put together a 2-hour package every single weekend on the greatest figure skating routines of all time.
Oh, right. So they're not having to pay for live.
Exactly.
Flip it together. Okay.
It would shoot through the roof. Are you kidding me? If
I'd watch that.
See? My point exactly. It's like the Stoico years. There you go. And but like to just say 6 hours of, don't get me wrong, but here's the thing too. They actually showed a game like during the week as well. Like so opening night was, I think, a Thursday night or a Wednesday night.
Right.
They showed the game on CBC.
Yeah.
So I mean, there you go. There's a case of, yeah, you talk about the fact that most times it's going to be on a Saturday night, and CBC might not have tons of original programming which would come up on there anyway, but there's going to be instances where it's going to come up on a weeknight. This is incredibly depressing. It was depressing that they lost it, in my mind. If they can pay a reasonable price to get it, that's fine. If they were outbid, fine. Then sever yourselves from it.
But even that article says that it sounded like the NHL was trying to make a deal with CBC. They couldn't agree on terms.
Compete.
But they would have gotten less money
if
CBC had agreed to certain terms. Yeah. And it's something about regional games and blah, blah, blah that I don't really get. But it sounds like the NHL was willing, and it's just we. I don't know. Suddenly, I'm the CBC. CBC blew the negotiations, is what it sounded like to me.
Yeah, but I'm wondering if at some point they were just hamstrung as well. I'm wondering.
They must have been.
I'm thinking what happened is the CBC walked into the negotiations with their top dollar. We can't go a penny more budget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, the NHL said, okay, we'll take that, but if we're taking that money, you're going to have to give up this. That, like, they wanted to give up the All-Star game, give up this, only show 2 out of the 4 games so that the NHL, like, they couldn't show regional games, so
they would have to choose the revenue.
Right.
Like, they would have kept the advertising revenue.
But here's the big thing that they didn't want to do, though. CBC, they've always done regional, so they've always been able to show. In Quebec, they've been able to show the Montreal Canadiens game, whereas in Ontario and other places, they've been able to show the Toronto Maple Leafs game. They actually wanted them to give up the regional games.
That's right.
So the CBC would have had to make a choice between the Habs or the Leafs for a Saturday night game. And you can bet that wouldn't have fly. Whoever lost the broadcast that week, that wouldn't have flown.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think still, if I'm not mistaken, the French rights are owned in Quebec by RDS possibly, and they possibly could have shown that anyway. I'm not 100% sure, but like, to me, this is just a disaster. To me, this is the CBC supplicating themselves to Rogers, and a national broadcaster should have more integrity than that. I'm not saying it should be better than that. It should have more integrity than
that. No, you're right. No, I totally agree with you on that point. Now, you know, going the other way for a hockey fan, I watched, you know, on last Saturday night, I had 4 games to choose from. I had one on CBC, I had one on City, I had one on FX Canada, and I had one on Sportsnet to choose from, which is a lot more than viewers have had. I mean, I'm a casual hockey fan, And part of that reason is because living in Toronto, I have one choice on Saturday night, and that's to watch the Leafs play.
Yep.
And I don't like to watch the Leafs play all the time. I like to have a choice. So the fact that I had choice was, you know, was kind of novel and in some ways overwhelming because I had four stations to choose from. So, you know, I don't know. While it is sad, how could, you know, CBC just couldn't can't compete with the money that Rogers has and the reach that Rogers has with regard to other channels to broadcast other games, I'm saying, you know, to even have something on FX Canada, the home of, you know, American Horror Story in Fargo.
Yeah, I, you're right. They certainly don't have the outlets that some of the other stations do. But admittedly, a lot of those outlets aren't Canada-wide as well.
No, you're right. Yeah.
So, you know, they are... It works for Southern Ontario.
Yeah.
It works for Vancouver. It works for big cities, maybe not even all big cities. It's certainly not going to work for places that are far flung who are only going to get the CBC anyway.
No, and there was something earlier on in this, and I know that we're talking about TV, but there was something earlier on in the story that talked about them losing the radio broadcast. Is that right?
No.
Okay.
So not the radio broadcast. They're losing it. There's a satellite show.
Okay.
That they used to come part and parcel with Hockey Night in Canada, and that apparently disappeared somewhere.
Okay, all right.
But yeah, like this is what I really want to know the details on is that studio as well, because Rogers came in and spent a ton of money on the studio. Now, if CBC just got rid of it and just said we're not paying for that floor anymore, and Rogers came in and they're paying rent, I'm fine with that. I got no problem with that. But if it's still somehow on the CBC's dime and Rogers is coming in using it.
But even, I mean, even if they are paying rent, the way the story is told, it just makes it sound pathetic. It's like, you know, people with their noses pressed against the glass looking up at the shiny new.
Yeah.
It all comes across as very, very sad for CBC. And I really, really, really hope they have a vision for programming because, yeah.
Like I say, 6 hours of figure skating would have done better. You know, it wouldn't have got better. It wouldn't have got better viewers by any means, but any viewers that you're getting paid on that you can sell advertising against. I mean, there are cable networks out there that sell advertising against old reruns of Alice, for God's sake. I'm sure that if you showed something on the CBC, you could sell ads against it.
Yeah, and they don't own the rights to the old games, do they? And old NHL games, do they?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure if they lost all of that stuff. Because I know, like, for instance, if you go on to Leafs TV, which is like a small cable network, they show a bunch of old Leaf games. So I'm not 100% sure who owns those rights. Yes. They barely have rights to anything, because especially now, because Rogers owns everything. So they show the day after the game, they will show a replay of the game. So they have the rights to that, and then they will show old games, and they'll show, like, talk television shows about the Leafs. Yeah, it's scary. Anyway, Greg, please bring us out of our doldrums and tell us about Ask Mikey.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot about that.
So Tuesday, when's this going to be up? So it may be right around the time that this podcast goes up, but I'm going to be hosting a chat with Mikey McBrien, who is one of the stars of Ice Pilots, because the final season is coming up in another week or so. So I'm going to be hosting a live chat. If you go on Twitter and use the hashtag AskMikeyNWT to ask a question, I will therefore take your question. I will ask Mikey, and we'll be on YouTube as well. So I'll send out a link to that when we're up and live. But yeah, if you've got a question for Mikey, ask Mikey, hashtag AskMikeyNWT, and I will ask Mikey McBrien your question about DC-3s and old planes and flying and how cold it can get in the winter and Yellowknife and all that fun stuff.
So you're doing the Google Live Hangout thing is what you're doing?
Yeah, it's going to be a Google, yeah.
So very cool.
And, sorry, when did you say it was?
It is going to be Tuesday, October the 21st at 1:30 p.m. ET.
Okay.
So yeah.
Well, I will make sure to post this early then.
Yes. But even then, like most Google Hangouts, you're able to go back afterwards and watch them because they're recorded.
Absolutely.
So,
right. Yeah.
So there will always be that option as well. And you could probably embed it into one of the blog posts or something like that.
Yes, I will do that.
Yeah, oh, there you yes. Go. Wow.
Very, very cool. As we wrap up this episode of TVA, the podcast, remember, by all means, send links to tveh.reddit.com, TVA. That's our subreddit. Please, if you feel like you enjoy listening to the podcast every week and you want to give us some value for value, go to patreon.com/TV_EH. See, I didn't forget to say it this week. I always forget to say it. Next week, we'll have another TV ABCs, so please listen in for that. But before we go, Diane, where can people find you when you're not here hanging out with us or threatening to go on vacation soon?
I am often ranting at the TVA website, which is tv-eh.com, and that's on Twitter at tv_EH, or I'm on Twitter personally at DEEKAYW.
And Greg, how about you?
And I'm in those same places attempting to talk Diane off the ledge.
We're like good cop, bad cop.
We really are. I feel like I'm in there applying the salve. And then when I'm not doing that, I am Greg_David on Twitter. One of these weeks I'll get it right.
I used to screw mine up all the time. I could never say my Twitter name.
There you go. It's the double the double underscore.
How about you, Anthony?
You can find all of the podcasts I do at anthonymarco.com. You can find me on Twitter at Anthony Marco. And by the way, in the tradition of what a lot of geeks do on Twitter, they have to come up with their scary Halloween name during the month of October.
Oh, yeah.
So I have got a scary Halloween name now, because you have to think of something that's kind of creepy. So my scary Halloween name, what did I choose? I choose Wolfmanthony Darko.
Wow.
So I'll be
waiting. Like, my name is already a Halloween name, so I don't participate in that.
Well, see, all you have to do is change Diane to Diane Wild. See?
Yeah. Oh.
And then Greg, you got to come up with something
new. I got to come up with something new, yeah.
Greg David just ain't scary.
No.
No, it's too good cop, Greg.
Yeah.
You got to get a bad cop name.
Exactly. You got to find some way to toughen that up, monster it up. That's all I'm saying. It's like Frank and Greg or something like that.
We work dead into David somehow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Grave.
The walking. I'll work on the that. Walking Greg. Yeah. There you go.
Oh, there we go.
Suggestions are welcome.
Yeah. Hashtag Greg. Ask my. Oh wait.
Well, that wraps up another episode of TVA for this week, and now back to your regularly scheduled programming.